that puts more pressure on London to put arms in the hands of Africans. Also, keep in mind that as we stare in the face of a referendum in Scotland in a few months that might lead to the secession of Scotland from the United Kingdom, keep in mind that Scotland only comes into the UK in 1707. There are major uprisings against London in the 1740s. The Scots are not necessarily seen as being politically reliable. We all know the story about the colonizing of the Irish, and they're not necessarily being seen as politically reliable, that is to say, to follow the wishes of the Union Jack. And this also puts pressure on London to try to enroll more Africans in their armed forces. And when they begin to send armed Africans to places like Massachusetts, where the settlers are already in the process of devising revolts, say in the 1760s, and the settlers are then oftentimes staring down the barrel of a gun wielded by an armed African, this was not pleasing to these settlers. It was enraging the settlers because they had embarked on a different model of development, which involved not putting arms in the hands of Africans, but basically enchaining and enslaving every African in sight. So there was this fundamental contradiction erupting between the settlers and London. And this culminates in June 1772 with Somerset's case, where it appears that London is moving to abolish slavery, not only in the British Isles themselves, but perhaps on the North American mainland. And
Gerald Horn, he's got a tenured professorship. That's good for him to say these heretical things. Quite a prolific writer, and his latest book is The Counter-Revolution. And a different scenario, an unwritten chronicle of unwritten motivations in the time of the revolution. Here on July 5th, I guess I could wait a day for the fireworks. Time for me to go. It's 2 minutes into the labor hour, and Union Edge, and then alternative radio. That would be at 1 o'clock, 1 to 2, indeed. Thanks for listening, and help support this different kind of access media, of which, thanks for listening. Obviously, you know that.
Working class. We're just not working. Hello, folks. I can try and hand that to you, Bill.
We're talking about the underwriting. A very important thing. And if you have an organization or small business or something, you might consider underwriting, WEFT.
You can underwrite this program, or you can underwrite any of our other variety of programs. We have some great music programs here and excellent public affairs and news programs.
That is correct.
It's a reasonable way for you to get your name out in front of a lot of worthwhile people out there. So, anyway, you are listening to the July 5th edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, or World Labor Hour, as we refer to it these days, on WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM on your radio dial, and streaming on the internet through our website at weft.org. Bob Pelesny sitting in as the host this week. Dave is on vacation with his family, and he'll be back next week. And Bill Gorell is here, one of the originators of the, it wasn't called the World Labor Hour, it was called the East Central Illinois Labor
Journal.
All
right. That was Peter Miller's idea.
Yeah.
I shortened it to the Illinois Labor Hour. Because for some reason, the programming committee here insisted that out of all of the public affairs programs, that this one had to have some specific local designation.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah. But that just hung on. Anyway.
Yeah. Bill's here. And
not that I'm ashamed of Illinois, but
no.
We'd like to be a little wider than that.
We are. We refer to ourselves now as the World Labor Hour.
We are global.
We are global, streaming around the world.
That is correct, at weft.org.
Yeah.
Will that get it there now?
Type that in, and that'll get it there. You can click on the Listen Live button, I believe is what it's called. So.
And maybe click on the Donate button, too.
The Donate button is still up there and still active, and, yeah, you can donate via PayPal. That's a very easy way to do it, and I think our donation form is available for download. You could mail that in, and you can always stop by the station here. We're at 113 North Market Street. We'd love to see smiling faces with a check or even a couple dollars in hand.
Yes, and I heard Lori Serb's station manager now.
Yes, correct.
Well, I feel good letting her manage donations that I would make.
Yeah, she's actually told me that she was out yesterday delivering some pledge premiums from last fall's pledge drive that hadn't gotten delivered, and she made it a point to actually drive them out to people that lived in the surrounding communities, and they were so grateful to see them show up about 9 or 10 months after our fall pledge drive.
She didn't make it to my house with mine. I think I had the $120 level. Was that cap, T-shirt, or something?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Cool.
I could use a new cap. Look at my cap. man.
Yeah, you could use a new cap.
It's, oh, it's beat.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, she's trying to get out there to the community. And I know we're going to be at a festival next weekend in downtown Champaign, the Mariposa Festival, kind of a new thing being put on by the Champaign Park District, and I think.
Oh, I was looking at the flyer out in the lobby. Is that those are all local bands?
Yeah.
I believe they all sounded familiar.
Yeah. So the WEFT will be out there, and we'll have a table. And I think that starts about noon and runs till, I don't know, 10 o'clock or something like that. So,
well, I tell you, it's worth standing by and just looking through the window and looking at the flyers there.
At WEFT?
In the doorway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of information there about music stuff all over, yoga classes, whatnot. And by the way, this hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call 217-328-2295. That's 328-2295. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. The programming of the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other union organizations and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And that's finally it.
That's good.
And maybe we should go back to the practice of using a music bed under these announcements.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like Sexual Harassment in the Workplace by Frank Zappa.
We can dig that out for next week. Yeah, yeah.
Groovy.
We should also say the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those at WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Purrier Incorporated. They just reflect the views and opinions of the two guys sitting here, so that's what you get. So I got a news story here, kind of came out on the Associated Press about unions representing government workers are expanding while organized labor has been shedding private sector members over the past half century. This is something been going on for about 50 years and stuff. It says a majority of union members today now have ties to government entity at the federal, state, or local levels. Roughly 1 in 3 public sector workers is a union member compared to about 1 in 15 for the private sector workforce. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, overall, only 11.3% of wage and salary workers in the United States are unionized, down from a peak of 35% during the mid-1950s. So that's quite a drop over the last 50, 60 years there, from 35% down to 11.3%.
Well, yeah, in fact, I believe that the AFL-CIO underwriting announcement used to say 7,500 members in Champaign County.
Oh, in Champaign County? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what happened to them all.
Yeah. So it says now the typical union worker is more likely to be an educator, office worker, or food or service industry employee rather than a construction worker, auto worker, electrician, or mechanic. says here, far more women than men are among the union labor ranks. And then it goes on and talks about a couple of things about the Supreme Court decisions this week. It says in a blow to public sector unions, the Supreme Court ruled this week that thousands of health care workers in Illinois who are paid by the state cannot be required to pay fees that help cover a union's cost of collective bargaining.
That's right. Like, these governments have written into law that they are open shops.
Right.
And this recent Supreme Court decision then makes it the – well, you're going to explain it about the agency fee, right?
Well, it says the case involved home care workers for disabled people who are paid with Medicaid funds administered by the state. Well, this story, we can go
right
on.
They're represented by the SEIU, and that was a big thing that Ron or Blago, we'll just call
Blagojevich.
Blagojevich, okay.
Yeah,
that Blagojevich did, and that was a good thing, I guess. But the Supreme Court decision just says now that these people will not have to pay any fair share agency fees for the privilege of getting their contracts negotiated and enforced,
right,
by the Service Employees International Union.
Says here that the largest union is the NEA, National Education Association, with 3.2 million members. And that represents public school teachers, administrators, and students preparing to become teachers. Next is the 2.1 million SEIU, Service Employees International Union. About half of its members work in the public sector. And the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, has 1.6 million, followed by the American Federation of Teachers, and then the International Brotherhood of Teamsters down at about 1.4 million. So, but once again, they point out severe droppage. It was in 1983, there were 17.7 million union workers. In 2013, it's down to 14.5 million union workers. So it's quite a significant drop off.
Yeah, and it's reflected in largely in the inequality that's happened, well, since 1970.
Right.
Basically, because if you don't have a large percentage, for example,
income inequality is rapidly expanding in this country.
That's right. One example would be Kraft Foods here in Champaign. Kraft has union plants around the country, other parts of the country. The Champaign plant is the flagship plant.
Mm-hmm. The largest in the country or in the world.
Right. And right now there is a organizing campaign being conducted by the UFCW. But I was talking to a young guy who works there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me, oh, well, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You
know? They're building that new warehouse. And I talked to a Kraft employee a while back. He says that's where all our jobs are going, to that warehouse over there. And that's going to be non-union there. So,
well, that warehouse, see, actually, nobody from... No, they aren't. People are trying. That's going to be. This guy was telling me that it's going to be operated by a third
party.
By a third party. Yeah, and they're also getting rid of their own trucks, and they're farming their trucking out.
Really?
So, yeah. So that might be something where they're losing. That's related to that. I've made a few thousand dollars off that project over the last few weeks, and I'll be.
Oh yeah, you've been working out there.
Oh yeah, and I'll be there at 2 o'clock Monday morning
doing some hod carrying and stuff.
Oh no, no man, there's no hod carrying there. This plant is also a really fantastic example of how modern construction techniques are cutting down union construction jobs.
Yeah.
For example, you said hod carrying. No, there is no hod carrying there. However, the walls were set probably by bricklayers. But the thing is, these walls are these things, we'll call them blocks, are 8 feet wide.
Yeah. They were all precast.
They're precast. You bring semi loads of them onto the plant and set them up with cranes. We did an entire coal store in Danville in less than 6 days.
Yeah.
The exterior walls for it.
Yeah.
And all that needed to be done after we left was the roof put on. I mean, for the walls to stay up is to get the rafters on and backfill the dirt around the bottoms of them. Another example of this is right now the way we're pouring the floors in there. We're using a machine called a laser screed.
Hmm.
And what it is, it's this big machine with a 20-foot-wide blade. that it can stick out on the real far on this telescoping arm, and you just bring in a concrete truck and you just dump concrete as fast as you can, and that machine comes over and these lasers guide it and make it the
keep it level
for the floor. And, you know, we use them outside for parking lots and stuff, too, where it gets real complicated trying to have angles to run water. And right there, I mean, that just, we can do that so fast, it would take us, I mean, see, most of the work, like the walls on that job, they probably got them done in less than two weeks. It would have taken months to do it with pouring concrete in place or using concrete block. The old way of doing floors would have taken us much longer too. We can do and this the pour that we're going to do Monday is going to be 1200 cubic yards of concrete.
Wow.
So just think of a cube that's a yard on each side of concrete, and then spread it out over I believe eight inches.
You getting that from a local company, or do you have your own batching plant there at the site?
No, that's coming from local companies. That is one of the big things about using concrete anymore is the energy and environmental value, because concrete is always locally produced,
pretty much.
The only problem is that cement takes extremely high temperatures to create that, and that could be overcome if we would just have a completely sustainable system. You know, you can heat stuff up with electricity.
Yeah.
Or even directed sunlight.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting kind of far afield, but
yeah.
We're looking for a wider vision of the world.
There you go. Let's go to a quick little musical break. We got a caller calling in at about 11:30 here, so hopefully she'll call in. Ashley Williams, she's a student and a frac sand activist out in LaSalle County, Illinois, so hopefully she'll call in by 11:30. I came across a new blues tune here during the week from Daddy Mac Blues Band out of Memphis, so I'm going to play this thing. So.
Well, somebody named Daddy Mac out of Memphis just has to be good.
Yeah, you got it, Bill. Here we go.
Probably all it's like barbecue.
No, it's kind of about government and work and stuff.
Government at a standoff. And the country is going down. Politicians driving Cadillacs, and I'm living hand to mouth. I don't care what's on the news, got my own daily blues. With drugs, guns, and money, people lose their lives. Babies having babies, nobody's thinking twice. I don't have to watch the news, got my own daily blues. They show on TV happening outside my front door. They talk about poverty, yet I've always been poor. I don't have to watch the news, got my own daily blues. Protection, cause the police don't help me none. of Smith & Wesson, but I'm not the only one. I don't have to watch the news, I got my own daily blues. I don't have to watch the news, watch the news, got my own daily
blues band with Daily Blues. So I had a little story here I kind of wanted to mention, that this is out of New York City. In a victory for new economy advocates, the New York City Council passed a budget last week that will create a $1.2 million fund for the growth of worker-owned cooperative businesses. The investment is the largest the municipal government in the U.S. has ever made in the sector, breaking new ground for the cooperative development movement. It says New York's Cooperative Development Fund was the brainchild of a coalition of community groups that came together to stage a series of public forums and advocacy days to secure widespread support for the initiative on the city council. Over the next year, the funds will provide financial and technical assistance in the planned launch of 28 new cooperatives and the continued growth of 20 existing cooperatives, supporting the creation of 234 jobs in total. So it says across the country, similar local economic justice coalitions have been seeking to persuade municipal governments and local institutions to throw their resources behind the development of worker-owned co-ops. In those resources, many advocates believe that could take co-ops from a niche movement to a broad-based strategy for creating living wage jobs and putting economic power in the hands of workers. So they're saying that to that end, in the Bay Area, the local organizers are currently reaching out to local officials for support in scaling up worker-owned cooperatives out there. They hope that that would constitute 5 to 10% of the local economy. And the coalition is particularly focused on creating jobs for workers of color in the low-income areas of the East Bay. They also talk about other hotbeds of co-op development include Richmond, California, where the city has hired its own cooperative developer and is launching a loan fund under the leadership of the Green Party Mayor Gail McLaughlin. I think Dave talked to her a little bit when he was up at that Labor Notes conference in Chicago. Also in Cleveland, Ohio, the city's Economic Development Department has worked closely with the Evergreen Cooperatives, a network of worker-owned green cleaning, farming, and construction businesses. Local hospitals and universities have also thrown their purchasing power behind worker-owned businesses. And they also talk about what was going on in Jackson, Mississippi. It said no city had secured greater local support for co-ops than Jackson, Mississippi, a majority African-American municipality where human rights attorney and longtime black radical activist Chokwe Labamba was elected mayor last year on a platform that included the use of public spending to promote cooperative enterprises. But following Lumumba's sudden death in February, the movement that brought him to office has been left struggling to implement the vision it had forged. But they say local activists say new mayor Tony Yarbrough has been tepid in his support for cooperative development planned by Lumumba's administration. But this is a growing trend throughout the country here.
What, you know, very progressive leaders dying of cancer?
Like, no, co-ops.
Oh, worker I mean, being co-op. Assassinated with cancer.
Yeah, from the stories I hear that there's no foul play in his death. So.
Yeah, and Chavez, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but that's interesting. It's interesting to see New York City get behind that a little bit and put some money towards that. And it would be good to see other cities create some good living wage jobs in their communities through worker-owned co-ops like that.
Yeah, well, I was hearing a story where, some of those people that were involved in the Kennedy assassination, darn it, New Orleans were doing something with cancer cells, too.
There's our caller, so let's see if we can get her on the air here.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Hello, you're on the air at WEFT. Is this Ashley?
Hi, Bob. This is Ashley. How are you?
Good, good. We're talking with Ashley Williams, and you're a student, and as you said, a frack sand activist in LaSalle County?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, thanks for calling in to WEFT here in Champaign, Illinois, 90.1 FM and streaming on weft.org. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in the whole hydraulic fracturing industry and the frack sand portion of it.
Okay. Well, as you said, I am an Iowa resident and 23-year-old college student at Illinois Valley Community College, and I'm actually pursuing my master's in environmental study because of my passion. So basically, to go back to a year ago, what changed my life is when I picked up a newspaper one day and, yeah, it changed my entire life. It's always been my strongly held conviction that the youth must inherit the green revolution, and it's imperative that we recognize we are the change to ignite this beyond the confines of our classroom windows. And it seems this changes more palpable each day. So last year, I decided to put these words to action with the launch of my MoveOn.org petition entitled Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sand Frack Sand Mine Near Starved Rock. And today I actually have almost 18,000 signatures gathered in opposition to this mine.
Wow. So this would be close to Starved Rock State Park out there?
This particular mine called Mississippi Sand, that's just one of the many that we are seeing today. There's been four new frack sands permitted within the past couple years. There's Mississippi Sand, which is located outside the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park, which is soon to be located. Northern White Sand is another one, and that's located in Utica. Quality Sand Products is in LaSalle, and then Ansel Sand is the last frack sand mine, and that's actually located in Utica as well.
A couple of quick things. There was just recently, the Illinois Congress turn down a bill that was going to kind of try and speed up frack sand mining approval or something like that? So.
Oh, yeah, that had nothing to do with frack sand. It was hydraulic fracturing. Yeah,
The
bill to speed that up. To put a moratorium on it in northern Illinois, but to speed it up in, you know, the southern portions where the fracking is actually happening. There's no fracking in northern Illinois and, you know, in our area. But, yeah, the fracking, like in White County, is already happening without the regulation.
Yeah, my name's Bill, and, of course, southern Illinois tends to have more carbon. Right. The oil companies or whatever these companies are that do this, they're also leasing land around here in central Illinois. However, it was only for about $25 an acre, which is really low.
Wow, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This area of the country has quite a bit of this frack sand. I think I've read that Wisconsin produces like 75% of the frack sand used in the entire world.
That is true. Yeah, they've been experiencing the boom for quite some time. It's actually the worst there in Wisconsin. This boom is kind of only starting to really materialize in the past couple years. But, you know, it's my fear that we will kind of transform into what Wisconsin is experiencing. So just so everyone knows what frack sand mining is, frack sand mining is the mining of silica, and they actually mine into the St. Peter sandstone formation is what they mine in here. And it's used as a proppant in fracking. So it means that it holds open the fractures in the shell to allow recovered fossil fuels to escape to the surface freely. And frack sand mining consists of removing the sand through blasting or dredging, washing, drying, further screening, and then eventually transport. And for one frack well, it actually requires 20 million pounds or 10,000 tons of silica sand during its lifespan.
Wow. I got a question. Are these like quarries or open pit kind of mines?
Yeah. Yes.
Really? So they is definitely, when people think mines, you kind of think of a hole in the side of a mountain, you know, that's not too obtrusive.
Or that they dug down through a shaft or something like that. But these are open pits.
And also, for all of that sand that's used, think of how, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's like millions and millions and millions of gallons of water per well.
That is true, yeah. I think 2 to 8 million gallons of water. Mm-hmm. And so, that's another problem here. We worry greatly about not only the air, but water concerns. So I was recently told that these mine discharge the equivalent of two Olympic-sized swimming pools, or about 1.25 million gallons of wastewater a day. So water usage is another big thing in frac sand mining, because there's no hydrology studies being conducted in our area regarding the St. Peter sandstone aquifer formation. And there's no laws governing groundwater withdrawal.
Yeah, here's what's ironic is I have a well in my backyard. I pour a glass of water, you cannot see through it until the natural gas starts clearing out from, you can see it clearing from the bottom as the gas percolates out the top. And they have to do this fracking.
Yep.
So
that's been a common thing in this part of the country for, I've heard about it since childhood. You know, of people having gas in their water like that.
So you mentioned environmental concerns as far as groundwater, wastewater, and, you know, the open pit mining and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's water and air concerns regarding particulate matter. In summary, I guess we're worried about that the expansion of these mines. So we're talking about the cumulative impact is my problem. You know, not each and every, you know, these single mines, but we're talking about the cumulative impact. So this, you know, may result in loss of biodiversity and habitat degradation, waterborne pollutants and depleted aquifers, decline in property values and tourism, and of course, increase in noise, air, light, and traffic pollution. The silica sand, the airborne silica, has been linked to causing silicosis and cardiovascular disease, immune system interference, lung cancer, and asthma.
So this affects both the workers there and residents that live nearby to these mines and stuff?
Yeah, no, especially. I know more recently in years they've cracked down a bit on workers' health. But my fear is there's no studies being done about the impacts to these communities. People are so quick to say that there is no impact. The silica is not going to travel that far. You know, there's the burns in place. There's safeguards to prevent and to, you know, to help the community. But my worry is that there's just not specific data in place that, you know, is telling us that these communities are protected. Like Northern White Sand, for example, we're actually currently dealing with the company called Northern White Sand, formerly Illinois Sand. Their mine has been permitted and they've begun construction, but now they're seeking two special use permits to operate a slurry pipeline industrial processing plant, which will actually be set to be located atop a volatile uncapped Brockman 2 landfill and adjacent to the Brockman 1 Spruce site. And then a rail and semi-truck transmodal facility is the last one in this permit application. And the application number 2 is for a barge to roll along the Illinois River. Now, this mine and the processing and that facility is located so, you know, they're nestled into this community. And, you know, it's my fear that, you know, that because there's no data, there's no study to safeguard these communities, that, you know, we don't know what will result, you know. There's so many unknowns in place here.
Yeah, yeah.
There's another way to look at this also. The more that you can stop the production of fracking sand, the less fracking can be done anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No,
and that goes all down the chain, you know, talking about everything, then the less water used in the actual wells, the less chemicals used in the actual wells, fewer wells, period, you know, and... the more that you can increase the costs of doing such a thing, the more good it's doing all the way down the chain.
Yeah, the less enticing it looks like. There is actually synthetic proppants that are available from places like China that make them, but they're not cost effective. It's very cheap to use, you know, the silica sand as a proppant. So, you know, that's why they're drawn to it. Because it is so cheap.
And fracking itself, like Bill says, the companies won't release the chemicals that they use and dump into the pump into the wells and stuff like that. And
yeah,
I believe
you talked about the Halliburton loophole.
Yeah,
they don't have to disclose that. But fracking was pioneered by the multinational conglomerate Halliburton. Decades ago. And, you know, now what we're seeing is this modern technology known as high-volume horizontal drilling. So that taps into shale deposits that were previously inaccessible due to the conventional drilling techniques. And this is only pioneered in about the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly new breed of fracking.
And I think quite a few recent studies come out and show a significant increase in earthquakes where people are doing hydraulic fracturing like that.
Yeah, that's true. Ohio, Oklahoma, yeah, you name it. There's Oklahoma is what's been in the headlines recently with all the earthquakes that are ensuing there.
Well, there's another way to look at this from the workers' point of view, or the effect it has on workers for employment, is that, yes, they talk all about on all these pipelines, these fracking, and about all of these jobs. It's going to be mm-hmm. 40,000 jobs because of this. My state representative believes that. Not my state representative, but I mean my congressional representative mm-hmm. believes that. And he's an idiot if he believes that. I've worked on pipelines. There's like 2,000 or 3,000 jobs at most, and they move with the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with this fracking, this sand mining, and even now, you know, with everything. The fracking will last nowhere near as long as the old traditional oil wells did. These things will produce for 2, 3, maybe 5 years. That's going to be it.
Yep.
And, we're the largest hydrocarbon producer maybe right now. We passed Saudi Arabia for oil, but it's not going to last very long. Those jobs aren't going to be there very long. The health insurance for the silicosis and diseases caused by, benzene and all the other nasty things in petroleum or carbon fuels that will be sucked in by temporary workers on these jobs won't be there either.
Absolutely. I believe that fracking mining is both are a boom and bust industry. When I was looking at numbers last year, it says, opponents, like you said, of sand mines, fracking in general, are quick to indicate the jobs. Well, there's about, there's 33,000 jobs approximately that are created and a annual $3.2 billion for the state that's produced because of tourism and outdoor recreation. So you're talking about Star of Rock State Park, Buffalo Rock. They're swarming these parks, like sand sharks, as we so appropriately, compare them to. Sand sharks, yeah. That's the best way I could describe them. And, it seems like there's no end in sight. We have a moratorium that's currently in place on the county level. So that will expire once the LaSalle County Comprehensive Plan is finalized in the coming days.
Hmm.
But what we're seeing now, in recent years, is that these companies are annexing into our municipalities. So they circumvent this county moratorium and they get their permit that way.
Hmm.
And there's just, there's the county and the municipalities are just, they're not working together. There's no collaboration. With Utica in particular, they're so quick to permit these companies, that's what we're seeing in place, currently.
What about the Illinois EPA or the Illinois Department of Natural Resources? Are they involved with this or discussions at least?
Yeah, they have to get, their permits through the DNR and the EPA. They have to seek out their NPDES permit from the EPA, their reclamation permit from the DNR. So they're every step of the way, they're always been in this permit process.
Mm-hmm.
But their permits to mine, come from what we're seeing right now is these municipalities.
Well, there's another thing, too, and this is something that a community was, I don't know if they were intending to stop a coal mine or not, but they decided that they did not want to sell water mm-hmm. to the coal mining company.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to keep that water in the ground for their own use. Because it was a coal mine's another thing. It's like a gazillion gallons of water a day, you know, and nasty stuff being rinsed with it.
Right. Runoff and stuff polluted and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned you've got a moveon.org petition.
I do, yes. I actually launched it May 27th of last year, and it's still up. I'm still collecting signatures. I did a petition delivery and a press conference last July, the end of this, July 31st, I believe it was, to Governor Quinn. But, it, you know, still, like I said, I'm still collecting signatures, and, you know, maybe I'll do another petition delivery, you know, in the coming months as well, because Mississippi Sand, as I said, is not open right now. They have all their necessary permits. I know they want to break ground in the coming months, as I've gotten word, but they're not actually operational.
And what's the easiest way for listeners to get at your petition? Through moveon.org, obviously.
If you type in, I don't have a bit.ly up right now, but if they just type in moveon.org, Governor Quinn, stop the Mississippi sand frack sand mine, whatever to that degree, it will come right up and they can sign it. And, you know, like I said, I hope to do another petition delivery. Also, I always make sure to engage with all my petition signers. I send out updates about every week or every 2 weeks. I'm updating them about Mississippi sand, but also Northern White sand, Ansel sand, all these various mines. And it's been such a great tool. I've met so many people. So many people have reached out to me, and I'm so internally grateful for the launch of this petition. And moveon.org has been so great to me as well. I actually partook in a climate movement conference last fall called Power Shift. It was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they do it about every other year, I've heard. And I got to be the keynote speaker after Josh Fox. As you know, the director of Gasland has put, you know, fracking on the map, the anti-fracking movement on the map. So, yeah, it's a value opportunity that I've been granted.
I was doing a little research. I came across an organization called SAFE, S-A-F-E. And it's, are you familiar with them? Southern Illinoisians Against Fracturing Our Environment.
Yeah. Yeah, SAFE is a great group. I've worked with them quite a bit. I know we're coming together. We're organizing an action coming up here soon. SAFE and some other members in Southern and in Chicago, in the Chicago area. They're a wonderful organization.
And I as I mentioned about Wisconsin being like the leader in frack sand mining. There seems to be a couple organizations up there. One was called WisconsinWatch.org. They seem to have a whole series of stories about health issues and concerns of residents living near these frack sand mines and stuff. So other places to maybe get some worthwhile information.
Oh, absolutely. We also have a Facebook page as well that I help to operate that, you know, gives updates about frack sand mining here, elsewhere, and in Wisconsin, and fracking as well, and fossil fuel related things, and it's called Protect Starved Rock in the Illinois Valley from Fracking and Mining. That's our Facebook page. That's another, you know, great way to gather some information. And I also wanted to say before I leave you that we have a very important vote coming up. You know, if anyone is in the area, it's on July 10th, so this Thursday at 1 p.m. at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Ottawa. It's at 401 West Main Street, and it's a LaSalle County board voting on the what I was just telling you about with Northern White Sand. They're two special use permit applications. It was recommended by the ZBA to deny that first permit application with the processing plant, etc., and they recommended a yes vote for the latter one, which was the barge facility. But we need an impressive turnout. It's absolutely imperative. So, you know, I just want everyone to encourage your neighbors, friends, and loved ones to come out and show their support for the ZBA's recommendation. And we have all that information, you know, up on our Protect Starved Rock site. And I, you know, sent out a notification to all my petition signers as well to try to encourage them to come out for this vote.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Ashley. And you have any other closing comments?
If you guys have any more questions, I just wanted to encourage everyone to come out to the vote. And like I said, come, you know, sign my petition, visit our site. You know, don't be a stranger. Reach out to me. Been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Bob.
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, I just signed your petition, so you now have 17,696 signatures, and you're looking for 20,000. And by
that's my goal.
Yeah, and MoveOn.org is, if you just go to their website, I couldn't really find any way to get to the petitions. Yep. There's a lot on there, starting a petition and managing petitions, but not signing petitions.
You just found it through Google? Or?
Yeah, and I had to go to about the, I believe it was at least the second result to get to that,
second page.
Sign the petition. But
yeah.
So anyway, right. Search petition, you know, MoveOn.org, petition, Quinn, fracking, sand.
There
yeah,
you go.
If you do just MoveOn.org, Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sand, it will come right up.
I can even
post it on our Protect Starved Rock site to make it easier for all our all the listeners right now.
Excellent.
Well, I better come up there and take some pictures before they mine everything.
Yeah. Destroy things.
We'll give you a tour. We'll give you a sand mine trolley tour. Okay. We've been wanting to do that for the longest time.
Wonderful. Ashley, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Yes, yes. It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So, Ashley Williams there. Bill signed the petition already. You can do a Google search and find that. With Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sands. Or go to Facebook, she says. And
well, this is beyond just, you know, fracking in the sand and all that. It's reputable scientists and organizations say that if we burn 25% of the proven reserves that we have right now, it is game over.
Right.
In their conservative estimate, I already think it's too late, but this carbon usage just has to stop.
Right.
And it's not on our backs as individuals. It should not be. How am I going to get to work? You know, there's no organization of society in any way, the government, the corporations, the NGOs, or anything else that are setting up transportation systems that we need, that are making other forms of power generation more available, such as Paul Muth. He loves the idea of decentralized. I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they would do something. It's like I said last week. This has to be a World War II level where you take factories over and have them start making stuff. This is the survival of all living things on this planet, which I think is a lot worse than Hitler.
Yeah.
And Tojo and the Italian guy, the fascist.
Mussolini
put together.
Yeah.
Plus Pol Pot, Mao Zedong, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, there's never been anything this important. It just blows my mind. I mean, now I talk to people. I talk to younger people. And it's like they're not, and I'll mention something like that. And it's sort of like, yeah, that's a fact of life.
Yeah. You're talking about all living things, all human beings, plants, animals.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
everything being destroyed or mutated to weird versions of everything.
Well, or at the very least, things are going to get very difficult to live for whoever can survive for how long. It's like Derek Jensen says, 90% of the large fish in the ocean are gone. Where do you stop? 92%, 94%. Well, you have to stop at 100%.
Yeah, game over. Let's go to a quick musical break here, and we'll be back with some.
You got any Rage Against Machine?
No, I don't, Bill, but yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll be right back with some closing comments here on the World Labor Hour and WEFT.
Actually, Tom Morello could afford to buy a lot of his solar panels.
He could, yeah, yeah. You should advocate for that, Bill.
Hey, Tom.
All right, here we go. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Me and my babe were talking, and what she said is true. Said seems like times are getting tough, like back in 92. You don't have a job, our bills are past due. So tell me, baby, what are we gonna do? Working many hours a week. They had a big layoff, and they got poor me. I'm broke and disgusted, in misery. Can't find no part-time job, nothing in the house to eat. Tough times, tough times is here once more. The grocery store, get a little more food on time. The man said, wait a minute, how do we stand? Said, I'm sorry to tell you, you're too far behind. Tough times, tough times is here once more.
Just couldn't keep her. Times are getting tougher than tough. Things are getting rougher than rough. Well, I make a lot of money, but I just keep spending the stuff. Well, now pork chops on the market as the butcher for a pound. I couldn't buy a pork chop when I laid my money down. Times are getting tougher than tough.